This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show number 54. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath in Australia. Coming up in the show, we have a chat with the King of Batting, Gary Palmer. And we also have a chat with Manu Gazandam. And as usual, we answer your questions for this week. Well, David, for the second game in a row, our team just edged out a nail-biter.
Oh, right.
Yeah, if you remember last week, we said we needed 10 runs to win.
Yeah, that's right.
We got those 10 runs, but when we tried to go for outright, we sent them back in after getting about 40 runs ahead because we got it all out.
Yeah.
And anything they swung their bat at connected, and they got about 120 ahead. Mm-hmm. And with the bat an hour and a half to go, mm-hmm. we had to bat it out, either try and get the 120 in an hour and a half or play for the draw, the second innings draw, so we just get the 7 points.
Right.
And they managed to roll us out for 9 for 91, which was pretty scary in the end because we were about 29 runs away from victory, but a wicket away from losing 10 points.
Oh, my.
And it was good because one of the younger players in our team, who's only about 16, he actually saved the day for us coming in at 10. And he batted just beautifully, keeping his composure while all the other bigger kids were bowling at him. And it was really good to watch in a way, but yeah, it was really scary. I think in the end, none of us kept our composure as we should have. We just sort of took it too easy, I think.
So why do you think that was?
I think we didn't consider the opportunity of losing. Until the last 10 minutes when we lost 3 wickets, we always thought we're either going to win this or draw this. And it never really dawned on us. So we were a bit too relaxed. So we weren't doing the basics right. We just thought everything will happen in due course because we've been playing well so far. And that's probably the mistake we made. We were a bit too complacent, which was a big reality check for us and something we learned from.
It's funny how one or two wickets can suddenly cause a team to a collective collapse, as if, you know, there's sort of a team mentality, even though batting is an individual thing. It's kind of a team mentality around collapsing. So, you know, if you can steel yourself as an individual to keep concentrating and also keep the team on track as well, then you're doing well there to get your team out of bad situations. And looks like you managed to do that. It's good. You know, they always say a sign of a good team is one who plays badly and still wins or still gets away with it. So you got away with it. You played well on the first day and you played badly on the second day, but you got away with it. So you ended up on the positive side.
Yeah, that's right. But in the end, David, our captain really blasted us. He sort of said that basically he would have preferred it if we lost, that we sort of had a better think about our games if we lost, and we would have been more serious next time in a situation like that, which was a fair comment as well, because it would have really hit home if we lost about the opportunity we gave away and from the position we were in to lose something like that. But yeah, as you said, it was really good to get away with it in the end.
Yeah, yeah. And how many runs did your captain get?
Yeah, it was funny though because he played a stupid shot as well, he blasted himself as well.
Well, that's okay. Yeah, as long as he's saying, right, this is everyone, including me. You're all idiots, including me. that's not too bad then, is it? But someone's got to say, you know, if you haven't got a coach there, you know, which most sides don't, do they? Then, you know, someone's got to say it, and the obvious person is the captain, even if he got out trying to hit the first ball out of the park for 6.
Yeah, exactly. So how's your week been, David? Pretty quiet?
Yes, the time of year that it is cricket-wise, it is pretty quiet. But, you know, we've been doing a lot of work around Pitch Vision Academy and my cricket coach. So that's always fun. We've got a new course on seam and swing bowling coming up from quite a big name. So keep your eyes peeled for that. That's going to be coming up very shortly. Some really good video content in there, and lots of coaching tips and lots of coaching drills for the budding seam bowlers and the and their coaches. So watch out for that.
We're up to that part of the show again where we pick the brains of our batting coach, Gary Palmer. Now, Gary Palmer was a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, and he now helps younger players in the game with CCM Academy. So if you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. So let's hear Gary Palmer's tips for us this week.
Hi, Gary. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Dave. Nice to talk to you again.
This question comes in from someone who has a 12-year-old brother who is a good net player. He says he has all the right techniques and looks good against throwdowns, but when someone bowls to him, he seems to lose his technique. He can't time it or hit the ball sweetly. He wants to do trials for his school and his club, and he wants to do well. So how can he improve his technique against bowlers rather than throwdowns?
Well, I think that obviously there's a place for lots of throwdowns and grooving and getting your shots right. But at the end of the day, batting in the middle is all about judging length and line. So if this young player has his technique in order and there's not too much to be working on or worrying about, maybe he should allocate more of his time to batting against mixed throwdown feeds, where he's more worried about judging the length and the line than he is about his technique. And again, using the bowling machine where you've just got it slightly loose there so you can pitch some up, pitch some short. But obviously the best practice for him would be in a net against the bowler. But my guess is, and I've done this myself, you get so technical about your batting that when a bowler's running up to bowl, and it's very similar to a batsman out of form, or batswoman out of form, you forget about watching the ball. And in the nets, it could be forgetting about judging length, line and width, and just be, you can have a barrage of thoughts on elbow, head, foot, this, that and the other, and you're not really concentrating 100% on watching the ball and picking the length and picking the lineup. So, you know, maybe that player either wants to clear his mind of all the technical points, or to just minimise it to one. But when the bowler runs up to bowl, the 110% focus from mind should be on that ball. And I think if you do that, it helps you to pick the line better than if your brain's clouded over with about 25 thoughts on technique, and watching the ball as well. So perhaps this person should practice a little bit more judging length and line, net scenarios, match scenarios, back the hard work that they're doing with their technique, if they're doing a lot of it, a lot of throwdowns, and just relax a bit more and think about judging length and line and building an innings. Maybe this person plays too many shots in the nets because they're so busy thinking, whatever ball comes down, I've got to get this off drive right. No, I didn't quite hit that one right. Hit another one, no. So they don't cherish every ball they face. So they've got to think more about watching the ball and what am I in this net to do? I'm in this net to bat for 20 minutes, leave the ball outside off stump, keep the ball along the ground, judge the length. But the most important point, watching the ball. Try to take the pressure off myself. Just watch the ball. Focus on watching the ball and try and learn to relax while I'm watching that ball.
Do you have any advice for a player who they know they're tensing up, they feel like they're tensing up and they're overthinking things? How do you get that kind of thing out of your mind?
Well, it can be very difficult with people, but again, it's about simplifying everything and just trying to focus all your energy and all your mind on the one thought, which is, you know, watch the ball, back yourself, back the hard work you've put in. That's why we need to do lots of training and lots of practice. So when you get in the middle, in the match, you don't have to be worrying about all these things. You've backed your preparation. You know you've done everything well. It should be second nature. Just get out there and watch the ball and think about scoring the runs. That's the advice I could give. I mean, the key thing is when you're opening the batting or going out to bat is to be physically relaxed and mentally alert. But it's not that easy to get into that state. But the quicker you can get into it, the more you can relax, the better your arms move. When the ball goes, you go with it, and your feet move a lot better as well. But we all, when we first get to bat, get a bit tense, and we all get a little bit, we can get a bit rigid in the way we move. Hence why, you know, you get out for one and naught, and every now and again, you know, the great players will get 100, 80, 2, 4, you know, Mr. Average gets 25-30 and then gets eight. Obviously, you're not, you know, you should be going on to convert those scores into bigger scores. I mean, the other way that you can help try and relax yourself is if you're standing at the crease and you tap the football, the bat against you, the outside of your foot, and just when you tap, try to relax your arms and really let your muscles go loose and just keep focusing on the ball in the bowler's hand, but try and keep that focus intense without letting your muscles and body start tightening up. Just try to relax and basically back yourself.
Thank you, Gary, for your time. And again, if you want to find more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Our next part of the show, we have the third part of our interview with Menno Gazzandam. Now, Menno has authored an ebook that consists of 120 pages of the tips and tricks for spinners. And if you're a spinner or a coach of spinners, then Spin Bowling Tips is the most comprehensive guide to spin bowling out there. So go to www.pitchvision.com/academy to pick up a copy. Let's have a listen to what Menno has to say for us this week.
How much should a spinner practice bowling his or her stock ball?
I reckon a lot, because that's your stock ball. It's the livery you bowl the most of the time. So really practice it as much as you can. Perfect it. Find that perfect pace you want to bowl the ball. Makes you feel comfortable bowling the ball, the perfect action. Most important thing is you must feel comfortable in delivery, because that translates into being confident. But that delivery has got to be practiced every time you go out to the nets, because you'll probably be buying that delivery 70-80% of the time. It makes your varieties more effective as well, because there's a clear differentiation between the two. And you'll be more confident bowling varieties if you're more confident bowling that perfect stock ball.
I know Ian Pont, when he's talking about fast bowling, he talks about bowling away from batsmen so as not to have a distraction, so as to get that stock delivery, that perfect line and length at a high speed. Would that be the same for spin bowling as well, to practice without a batsman a lot to make sure that you can get the ball in the right place over and over again?
I would definitely recommend that. That's a very, very good tip for spin bowlers. There can be a lot of distractions when you bowl to the batsman. I mean, you always think, who am I bowling against? And he's really good at that shot, he's really bad at that shot. And you, in your mind, when you bowl to a batsman, you're thinking of a game situation. Taking those distractions away would make you focus on your run-up, on your action, on your release, on your grip. The things that you don't have time to think of in a game. So those things got to be imprinted in your mind and in your subconscious, that by the time you get to the game, you don't think about that. Your action is flowing. You're feeling confident. You're comfortable in your action. And that comes from repeatedly bowling that stock ball. And I would go and recommend that as well, to practice without batsmen.
Yeah, I especially see, especially with younger cricketers, you get the one who comes in and has a slog. And then that can really put a spinner off. You know, they start trying to, especially with the younger kids. You know, they start thinking, well, hang on a minute, I don't want to be slog, so I'll go and bowl medium pace instead. And suddenly, because
exactly, yeah, that's the thing I've seen as well. Everyone gets in there to want to have a go at the spinners, and then it looks bad, especially for a young kid. It feels bad, but the irony is, you probably got a wicket with that guy slogging him and being caught on the boundary. I mean, he's not a strike bowler, he's a spin bowler. I myself got most of my wickets, guys being caught on the boundary. I put a guy out there, toss it up, have him go at it, and get him out caught at cow corner. But that is definitely something that young spinners shouldn't worry about. But as a coach, maybe it's best then if you just have them ball without a batsman first, get them comfortable in that stock delivery, and then take them to the nets. And also tell them, don't worry, if you get slogged in the nets, it's probably a wicket.
And again, if you're a spinner or a coach of spinners, then Spin Bowling Tips is the most comprehensive guide to spin bowling. It's going to help you a lot. So go to www.pitchvision.com/academy to pick up a copy. Welcome to the listeners' question section for this week. And David, our first question is from Tom, and he says, I'm very interested in becoming a pro cricketer as I live in Bristol, and the standard of professional cricket there is very high, as they're slowly becoming a stronger side. I was wondering, would it make more sense to get into a county side that is not doing as well in the first 11, pro side of things? He says, I play under 15s and under 17 club cricket as well and keep for both. I can bowl at around roughly 65 miles per hour and I'm quite handy with a bat. Would it be worth getting some pro coaching? And also, due to the nature of junior cricket and the length of the season, would it be worth joining a different club and play adult cricket to prolong the short season? David, he's asked a couple of questions there. Firstly, let's address the question about playing in a weaker side, a side not doing as well in the first 11. What do you think about that, David?
Yeah, he's talking about Gloucestershire there, just for people who aren't familiar with the geography of the UK. Gloucestershire play in Bristol.
Yep.
And I think he's probably overthinking the problem. What he's doing, he's looking at the first team and thinking, right, Gloucestershire have got a reasonably strong first 11, so yeah. I might not get into them, so maybe I should go and play for Glamorgan, who have, you know, got a weaker first 11, say, or Leicestershire, who have got a weaker first 11. Well, I mean, if he plays under 15, he's going to be either 14 or 15 years old, so he's probably thinking a little bit too far down the line. Even the very best players don't play county first 11 cricket when they're 14, 15, 16. I think, you get the odd legend like Tendulkar or someone, you know, they're the exceptions that prove the rule. You know, most players are going to be coming through into the first team in their early 20s. You know, even the really good ones, you're probably talking 17, 18, getting into the first team. So at the very least, even if you're, you know, a future Kevin Peterson, then you're still looking at least 2 years before you even have to start thinking about stuff like that.
Yeah.
The first step, you should really go back down the ladder and think, right, the first step is I'm playing club cricket for juniors at the moment. How do I advance from there? Well, there's two ways to advance from there. The first way is to play men's cricket, which we'll come to in a minute because that's another question that he asked. And the second is to play representative cricket for your county at the age group level. So you've got to get into your county age group as quickly as you can, because the standard of cricket is higher in county under 15s and under 17s than it is in club under 15s and under 17s, as you would imagine. So that's the first step. Get yourself onto a trial for Gloucestershire under 15s, or maybe have a look around the local area for a minor county to see that there's certain rules about where you live. You can only play for certain counties for a representative level. So have a look, see what options you've got there, and get yourself into representative cricket as quickly as you can. Once you're in representative cricket and you're playing a good standard of club cricket as well, then you can look to go to sort of county academy level. And most counties now combine, I'm not sure about Gloucestershire, but most counties now combine their academy with their second 11. So it'll be sort of some sort of county academy or county second 11 set up. You'll be playing in there to be trying to get yourself a professional contract. Ideally, you'll be want to be selected for a county academy by the time that you are 16 or 17, because it starts to get harder to break into county cricket the older that you get. But it's not impossible. Players can do it anything up to, well, I mean, probably mid-20s. If you're good and you kind of miss the system. But to get through the traditional way, if you like, the conveyor belt method, you want to be getting into representative cricket, then academy cricket, and then the county second 11, then the county first 11. Now, so it doesn't really matter which county first 11 you're playing for at the end of all that. It doesn't matter how strong or weak they are. You're thinking too far ahead. Maybe when you're in an academy and you're playing second 11 cricket and you think you're good enough to play first class cricket, but you're not getting a chance because the first team is strong, then maybe you would consider moving to a different county. But you know, for now, you don't think about it. You're thinking too far ahead. So his next question was, should I get professional coaching? Short answer.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Good coaching makes a huge difference. There's no doubt about it in my mind. I say good coaching because you have to be careful about the coach you select. You have to pick the right sort of coach. To give you an example from my own experience, we've got Gary Palmer's CCM Academy, of course. Gary is in that area anyway, but the CCM Academy is an example of a very well-run academy that is designed to groove players into playing professional cricket. So if you can find something like that, I'm not saying you have to go for CCM Academy, but that, you know, I've been to academy sessions. I know how Gary runs them. He teaches players how to play as a professional cricketer, and he does that in a few different ways. Like, for example, when he does a full day's coaching session, it's really very, very intense. There's a lot of technical work, a lot of learning, a lot of pressure is put on the players to perform. And if they don't perform, then, you know, if they crack under the pressure, then that shows you're not going to be able to do it at the highest level. So, you know, it's a really big test of your ability to play first-class cricket if you're doing well under the pressure of playing at one of these academy sessions. Second, if you have professional coaching from Gary, Gary's CCM Academy plays against county academies. So, or sometimes even county second teams when they're combined county and academy. So the second thing is you know what kind of standard of cricket you're aspiring to because you're playing against the players who are already in the system one step above you. So if you play 8, 9, 10 games in a summer against this high standard of opposition, again, you will know whether you've got a chance of making it or not if you can perform against the higher level of players. The only thing I would say to be careful of is you have to be careful of the type of coaching, as I've mentioned before. You don't want a coach who's going to put you back. So you want to pick someone who's probably got experience of playing at least first class level and someone who's very experienced when it comes to coaching. What you don't want to be doing is sort of paying a local coach who sort of might be an ECB qualified coach and they've been coaching, say, representative level cricket at under 12s or under 13s or something like that. They played a good standard of club cricket, but they've never made it to the highest level themselves and they've never helped anyone else make it to the highest level. Those type of people, although they can do a decent job, and many of them can do a decent job, you've got to be a little bit careful because they've not been there themselves, either as a coach or as a player. So they're not going to be the best to help you be able to do it either. So that's, again, where I know I keep coming back to CCM Academy, turning into a bit of an advert for it. But this is what I've got the experience of. It's something like CCM Academy, it's been set up with the whole idea of it is to get you into professional cricket. If you've got the raw talent, they can turn that raw talent into a sort of a finished diamond. And they've done it with players in the past. And I'm very confident they'll do it again. So, yes, get professional coaching. Get good professional coaching.
Yeah.
And the third thing was, should you be playing men's cricket? If you are good enough, and that's a big proviso because you don't want to go playing men's cricket too early, but if you think you can do it, and you know, maybe sort of the captains of the teams will be able to help you whether you can play at that level yet or not. If you are good enough, then absolutely you should be playing men's cricket as soon as you possibly can. Because men's cricket, it's a big jump up from junior cricket to men's cricket. The games are longer, the games are harder, and the quicker you can get into that environment to know what you're going to be up against, the more you're going to learn. And we all know about the 10,000 hour rule where, you know, it takes 10,000 hours to master any particular skill, including playing cricket. Well, you know, you've got to start on that 10,000 hours as quickly as you can by playing men's cricket. And I think it's Greg Chappell who said, because he was playing men's cricket relatively early, you know, that taught him a lot more about how to deal with a highly competitive situation than playing a lot of junior cricket and hardly playing any men's cricket. So, yes, absolutely, get into the men's team as quickly as you can. It might mean some boring games where you're batting at 11, don't get much of a bowl, and you know, have to field from fine leg to mid-on for most of the game. But you know, think of it as a long-term investment, that, you know, you're gradually moving up the batting order as the captain trusts you more. You're gradually getting more of a bowl, you know, as you know, maybe the game situation is out of the way and he can sneak in a few overs in the middle of the match or something, and gradually you can build up your confidence so you can start playing at a higher level. I mean, you probably start playing at quite a low level men's cricket. Well, of course you will, you know, you'd be wanting to find a team who have a third 11 or even a fourth 11 and then work your way up until you're playing second 11, first 11 men's cricket as quickly as you can. But, you know, be patient, put in the performances, be prepared to go down to the ground on a Saturday afternoon with your kit, but even if you haven't been selected, because chances are someone will drop out in the last minute, and if you're hanging around with your kit saying, I'm ready to go, then someone will say, right, come on then, you've got a game. That's all part of going from junior to men's cricket, and it's very important that you do that as quickly as you can. So, short answer, yes, play men's cricket as quickly as you can, with the one small proviso was you have to be ready, because some players are ready earlier than others. So you have to be ready and get some advice from parents or coaches or someone like that to see whether you are ready or not to play men's cricket. But if you are, start playing.
Can I say, David, the experience gained for a junior playing men's cricket is invaluable. I mean, when I was a junior, I played two or three games a season, men's cricket, filling in here and there, and just made the transition from junior cricket to senior cricket that much easier, because you've been there before, you've done that, and it's not as hard anymore. You're not intimidated, and it makes it a lot easier. It raises your confidence as well. So I couldn't agree with you more about getting yourself up there. Well, David, our next question is from an anonymous person, and he says, my 15-year-old daughter has only been playing for 12 months. She's a natural fielder and bats well. She's now playing county cricket. What can I do to help her in the off-season? Now, David, we know you have a guide on the My Coach website about the guide to off-season, but I was just wondering, because she's a girl, is there anything different they have to do in terms of maybe nutrition or fitness, or is it exactly the same as guys do?
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly the same. There's no difference at all. There's differences in the way that you might approach how you introduce these things to boys and girls, because, you know, culturally everyone's got slightly different things, but physiologically speaking, nutritionally speaking, there's no difference really at all. Off season is a really good time to work on fitness, and when I say fitness, I mean all round athletic ability. So I'm not just talking about getting stronger or getting faster. I'm talking about just generally improving athletic ability. And ideally that is through another sport. Any sort of intermittent activity type sport. I mean, it could be football, could be rugby, could be hockey, basketball. The list goes on and on. So, you know, pick at least one, if not two other sports. You can do nothing but learn more about yourself and your ability to move through space, and, you know, hand-eye coordination and perception and general athletic ability than playing another sport to, you know, competitively. You don't even have to be.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be. You don't have to count it as your main sport. But young players, especially teenagers, the benefits far, far outweigh the costs of playing extra sports. At the age of 15, you could easily play three sports. Maybe two would be better, but I certainly wouldn't stick to one sport, even if it is cricket. The other big option for me is get in the gym, because against all popular belief, teenage girls can do strength training. There's no problem with a teenage girl doing a strength training as long as they do it safely and effectively. They don't have to go and run on the treadmill for hours on end. They don't have to stick to the pink dumbbells in the corner. They can lift weights. They can lift relatively heavy weights for their size, and they can get stronger and they can get faster. And again, the benefits far outweigh the costs of not doing those things. So if you can, the only trouble is there's a big stigma of teenage girls going in the gym, and that is hard to get around. And for a lot of people, it's impractical because they just don't want to go in the gym. And I can understand that, and I wouldn't force anyone to do it. But if you can get someone to go into a gym where the instructors, the trainers, they know what they're doing, they know how to deal with the adolescent trainer, then you can make huge strides in both performance and injury prevention in just a couple of sessions a week. And just use the off-season to work on general things, strength, speed, agility, power, flexibility, those kind of general things. And you can do that in the ideally with another sport, or you can do that in the gym, or both. It's yeah. also a good time to work on technique. I would say that if we go back to playing another sport, I would say probably that if you're going to be doing technical work, I would leave a good gap between the end of the season and the start of you starting to do technical work, at least a couple of months. Because the problem these days is, probably not so much with girls, but certainly with boys, is that they play cricket all year round. As soon as the season finishes, as soon as the summer's over, they're in the indoor nets, they're doing their coaching sessions with the representative level, or you know, with private coaches, and it becomes a year-round thing. And if you are playing one sport all the year round, then you get over-specialised. You get too in your little cricket bubble, and you forget how to be just more generally athletic. And if you've got players who are so highly specialised, then you're asking for trouble later on, when they're more prone to getting injuries and they're less adaptable. They become less adaptable and they're less well-rounded, both in the cricket environment and just more generally speaking, because cricket becomes everything, and to the exception of anything else. And we all love cricket, but you've got to have a balance. So probably in the UK, yeah. I'd say my general opinion is, when the season ends in September, then probably you wouldn't do anything then until after Christmas, and then maybe you can start doing some technical work. So that's about 3 to 4 months out from the start of the season. 3 to 4 months is plenty of time to make big technical strides forwards in time for April or early May, depending on when your season starts. Best way to do that is to get someone who is a decent coach, like we were talking about before. Find a decent coach who coaches at the level that you aspire to reaching. So for our previous friend who wanted to play professionally, you want a professional level coach. Maybe for our 15-year-old county player, you know, maybe she doesn't want to play professionally. You know, there aren't many professional cricket opportunities for women in the UK. Then maybe you can go for a coach who, you know, teaches boys under 17s representative level cricket or something like that, you know, a slightly higher level than what you're at the moment, so you're getting that little boost up. So but going back to the original question, do plenty of fitness training in whatever way you enjoy most, ideally another sport and the gym, and secondly, do lots of technical work, but leave a gap between the end of the season and starting the technical work over at least a couple of months.
You can get more tips and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. Stay tuned for our next show on the 13th of November. So if you want to get in touch with any of us, you can email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.